Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, welcome to Sparty Talk, everyone. Satchmo here. First podcast of the college football season. Sorry for the delay to be getting on the air, but back at it, back in the saddle. We'll be joined shortly by the one, the only, the Thin Man DB. Michigan State 3-1 to begin the 2018 football campaign. 3-1. And, well, not exactly the best 3-1 when you think about it. It's been a problematic 3-1. Struggling, run game struggling. And that's just not good, folks. I mean, they just look like they've been in bad shape the entire time. The defense struggling to cover the pass, and DB's having trouble dialing in, so I'm just trying to help him out here. And so, yeah, so defense struggling to cover the pass, stout against the run, struggling to cover the pass. And so that seems to be problematic as well. And it's really, if you take a look at the defensive struggles to cover the pass, it dates back to last year. Teams would dink and dunk their way across the field against them. And it wouldn't be, they couldn't stop it. The corners are holding up well on the outside. The linebackers struggling, safety play struggling. The running game, running backs injured, offensive line injured, all sorts of problems on that front. So a lot of this really depends, and as we welcome in the Thin Man DB. Greetings, DB.
Greetings and salutations again, pardon me.
Yes, it is good to be back on the air. A lot of this, DB, how you view the Michigan State football team is a glass half full, glass half empty sort of situation. Do you view the absence of a running game and the absence of an offensive line and the injuries to the receiver as half empties, proof that Michigan State isn't going where? Or do you go, hey, they're 3-1 despite doing all of this, and they've got no place to go but up? And the same thing on the defensive side of the ball. Is the glass half full? Hey, if they can just get a little better on defense, in terms of stopping the short to intermediate route, they're going to be hard to beat. Or is this a glass half empty situation? Well, they couldn't stop it last year, and they're not stopping it this year. Glass half full, glass half empty. And then the other way you want to look at it is Michigan State strong through three quarters for most of this year. And Satchmo was there to witness the 1/4 quarter collapse in person out in the desert in Arizona. Apparently, I was the only one that enjoyed the heat out there. You saw it against Central. You've seen it consistently all year long. The 4th quarter fades, and both the offense and the defense, glass half full, glass half empty. DB, how are you feeling about this Michigan State team 4 games into the season? Glass half full, glass half empty.
Well, I still feel glass half full for a season similar to last year. If that makes sense.
So you're a glass half full on the relative sense. Yes, that is interesting. I am falling into the glass half empty category, which is tough. But here's why. If you take a look at this team and the number of starters that were returning, you would have expected this team to show some growth, either in terms of putting a pass rush together or in terms of figuring out how to cover the short to intermediate passing game, in terms of the offensive line getting better. Yes, the offensive line's been dinged up, but the offensive line hasn't improved. In terms of an effective running game being put together, all of this stuff, you would expect there to be something a little better than there is, and DB, we just haven't seen it. So it's hard for me to really get excited about this team as well as their record says, just because I'm not seeing the expected improvement. In fact, I'm seeing regression, especially along the offensive line, and especially across covering the short to intermediate route. I mean, teams throwing for 300, 400 yards. Yeah, we're keeping them off the scoreboard. It's the classic bend but don't break defense. But I'll tell you what, the good teams are coming. And if you think Ohio State and Penn State aren't going to knock on the door and punch those touchdowns in, you got another thing coming to you.
Well, so this will go back to this is our first pod quite a while here, but this will go back to offline conversations we probably had in the summertime, where I think I would say that and I'm not going to be the judge of all Spartan Nation here, but I've never had any notion that this team, even going into the season, is capable of beating Penn State or Ohio State. I just don't see it. I've never thought it. I think our offline conversation in the summer, sitting at a baseball game, might have been 8 wins, 9 wins, somewhere in there, 10 if they're lucky. You know, they're not going to have a 4-hour rain delay this year against Penn State. That's probably not going to happen again. Is that what you would say? 8 wins, 9 wins?
Yeah, well, yeah, but I'm not judging the progress based on the team, on the record, right? I mean, this team could have gone 7-5 and still taken leap forwards in my mind. I'm looking for progress on the field. I'm looking for improvement in play. I'm looking for an offensive line that seems to know what it's doing. I'm looking for an offensive line that can get a push. I'm looking for a defense that doesn't let spread offenses throw the ball left and right down the field and show a little resistance. And even if the results aren't on the scoreboard, I'm okay with that. I just want to see the team playing better than it is. And I feel like it's been quite some time since we've seen a Michigan State football team play at peak efficiency.
You're including last season and the year before?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, go back to last season. This team last year struggled to cover the same sorts of passing routes that they're doing fine against now.
Right.
You know, they held up well on the corners, right? You couldn't go deep on them, and you couldn't really run the ball on them. But if you played that Northwestern-style offense, and you want to know what, everyone's sort of picked it up, even against Maryland. I mean, all the teams are looking, yep, well, we'll just dink and dunk Michigan State defense up and down the field. And now, like I said, Michigan State's done a good job of bending, not breaking. You can't sustain that all year long. You're going to start breaking at some point.
Yeah, so you make some good points there. So let's sort of throw a net over the last couple of years. So 2016, the really bad year, that one, lots of injuries, lots of dysfunction on the field and off the field. Started in the trenches both ways that year, right? You know, offensive line, very bad. Defensive line, very bad. Last year, we saw the defense make big strides. They looked much better. There was more of a pass rush. The secondary improved, with the exception of the Ohio State game. There was still that old bugaboo last year, like you were saying, where they were sort of – the defense was not – doing its part of the job. The offense, sometimes even last year, I noticed in some of these games you mentioned, I think of the Maryland game at the end of the year, and I think of the Rutgers game where the Spartans were able to do it just because they had a little bit more talent, but they didn't. It wasn't as though they could blow even those teams off the field, you know?
No, they struggled to run the ball last year.
Yeah, they struggled to run the ball, and that's still the same in a big way this year. And that's
I think if you circle everything about the offense, they've got a pretty solid collection of wide receivers. And Brian Lewerke is a good quarterback. He's making more mistakes this year. I'll get back to Lewerke in a second. But I think everything starts right on the offensive line. That's just sort of like the straw that stirs the drink, and it's not stirring it correctly right now. Wouldn't you say?
Look, everything starts on the offensive line, but this is a team, DB, that frankly struggled to put up points last year, right? I think they're around 28 points a game or something like that, right? They didn't crack the 30 mark, that's for sure. Maybe they did, but I don't think so. And they're struggling to put up points again this year. And so, problem on the offensive line, without a doubt. So that is a clear weakness. And the Michigan State football coaching staff and the Michigan State players and whoever you want to get in on this has not found the right mix of players to play on that offensive line. Whether it's for injury or whether it's for some other reason, it's just not there. And so there's not a lot you can do about that. But that said, I mean, schematically, let's even before we get to schematically, I mean, right now, Michigan State's best running option is Brian Lewerke. He's their best running back. In fact, the best play for Michigan State right now is, okay, Brian Lewerke, drop pass, drop back. If you got someone open, throw it, and if you don't, run. That's the best Michigan State play on offense right now. And which is frustrating. And then, excuse me, I don't have a cough button here. By the way, folks, if you're wondering why there's no music or there are no sound effects or anything like that, Blog Talk Radio is acting up, and we've got issues on that front. So we'll figure it out eventually, and we'll get that going eventually. Right now, Blog Talk Radio is like the Michigan State running game, dysfunctional. But even in the passing game, DB, I mean, you're seeing Lewerke making mistakes. You're seeing him overshoot receivers. You're seeing him. I mean, there was one game. Not the Central Michigan game, but the game prior. I was like, yeah, against Indiana. I was like, wow. He reminds me when, you know, he was just starting, overshooting receivers, throwing high, all over the place. So we haven't seen Lewerke at peak efficiency either. And at a certain point, all right, we're into year three of the Lewerke era, right? Now, granted, one was an injury, so last year was the full season. So, all right, call it year two of the Lewerke situation. At what point do we decide that this is who Lewerke is rather than, oh, wow, look at all the potential?
So that's a good question. I still believe that Lewerke is better than he's shown. I think that he's making more mistakes because, just my impression, he's trying to do more. He's trying to compensate for a running game that's not working and an offensive line that's not really all there. And he's trying to do too much. And somehow the coaching staff has to help find a happy medium there. I think he's very talented. He can move with his feet. Is he a Heisman candidate? Well, no, probably not. But I think he's a good enough quarterback to, maybe not this season, but maybe next season, help the Spartans win a Big Ten championship. I do believe he can be to that level.
I think so, too. I tend to agree with that. I mean, I actually think, look, could you imagine where this offense would be without Lewerke? So let's start at that as a baseline. It would be disastrous. Lewerke is carrying this offense. And is he making some mistakes along the way? Yeah. Has he been inaccurate along the way? Yeah. Would this offense be better if his accuracy improved on some of that? Yeah, it would. But let's face it, without Lewerke, this offense is dead in the water. It's not going anywhere because the offensive line, DB, is just that bad. And we have running backs that are learning to be running backs on the job, right? Between Hayward and I think Jefferson, you got two guys that were quarterbacks in high school, and so they're just learning. They're just learning. I think Weston Bridges is a running back in high school, but the other two, they're learning to be running backs, let alone playing at the top level. And so it's a really odd situation. You've got L.J. Scott and the mystery injury, so he's not really of much help on the running back thing. So you combine it with the bad blocking with the young running back core who just learning how to play the position, you're not getting much. And then now you've got wide receivers that are dropping like flies. Felton Davis, the last man standing right now.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. It's a really tough situation, and now you're going into, the schedule gets, trickier. I mean, there's going to be some, So here's what I say about it. The Spartans are fortunate that they don't have the likes of Wisconsin and Iowa on their schedule this year. I'm not passing off Northwestern here or anything, but looking around at some of the competition that's on the Spartan schedule, despite the way this team is, I still believe they can win 3 or 4 or 5 more games. And I'm only saying that because I just don't think the quality of it after you go past the top teams in the Spartan division, it's not there.
Yeah, but I'm not sure where we fit into that mix. I really don't. And here's the other thing before we figure out where we fall into that mix, as Michigan State falls into that mix. I actually think Michigan State matches up better against Wisconsin than they do against Northwestern this year.
Yeah.
As absurd as that sounds, it's a better matchup for the Michigan State defense.
Yeah, you could say that. Wisconsin might be able to win that with a better offensive line and some toughness than Michigan State. But you're right. I could see that point.
The strike of the Michigan State defense, I mean, and realistically, the true bright spot of this Michigan State team is the run defense. It's outstanding.
Yeah.
And they could stand up to that Wisconsin offensive line. I'm not saying they won't get worn down in the end, but they could stand up to them. And I think Lewerke is good enough to get some points on the board against that Wisconsin defense. I'd rather take my chances against Wisconsin than against Northwestern, who likes to spread it out and throw those short to intermediate routes that the Michigan State defense just can't cover.
Right.
I mean, the linebackers are struggling to cover, and the safeties are struggling to cover. And Northwestern will eat that up.
So, but next week, I mean, Northwestern, by my way of seeing this, they give up a lot of yards rushing. And so I think the Spartans might be able to, they can do anything, fine-tune their running game a little bit this week.
Well, we were hoping they were going to do that against Central, and they weren't able to do that.
That was disappointing. That was Iowa.
It's very disappointing. I mean, and especially considering the thing you want to do against a team like Northwestern is keep their offense off the field. That's the strength of their team, the offense, and you want to keep the offense off the field. And if you can't keep the offense off the field, it's tough sledding.
Right. So far, looking at Northwestern, so they beat Purdue early on, but again, I'm not really sure what to say about Purdue other than Purdue's defense probably isn't that good. They only scored 7 points against Duke. They got into a shootout with Akron, and then they did have a 17-0 lead against Michigan, but then they couldn't score any. Michigan's defense put the clamps down.
Yeah, well, Michigan's defense was outstanding in the second half.
Yeah.
Just outstanding in the second half.
Yeah. And so Michigan won that game. And so by my way of seeing this, you know, I'm just looking at the Spartan schedule. And again, I'm not trying to demean Northwestern or say anything's a given. But I'm going to say this. This is not 2016, but this is not 2017 either. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I just view things from a matchup standpoint rather than putting in a historical perspective. And, for example, I think Michigan State lines up better against Michigan than does against Northwestern, just because of the style of offense that Michigan wants to run. It's a better fit for the Michigan State defense. Whereas the Northwestern one, that's a game that it's a game that Michigan State should win. Is Michigan State the better team? I would argue yes, but there's the old saying in boxing, styles make the fight. And Northwestern's style of play, it gives Michigan State fits. And with given the Spartans problems running the ball, I watched part of that Michigan-Northwestern game, man. I mean, Caron Higdon would rip off a run for 10, 12 yards, and he'd do 2-3 plays in a row. And I'm sitting there going, well, when's the last time Michigan State running back did that? Wasn't this year, and it wasn't last year, and it wasn't 2016. So you got to go back to 2015.
Right.
Before we saw anything like that. So, yeah. Can Michigan State win? Should Michigan State win? Yes. Will they win? I've got my doubts.
Yeah. Well, I'm a little more optimistic just because I understand what you're saying. This could be a repeat of Utah State at the beginning of the year. But I think, you know, just looking down here and seeing what kind of team this is and matching them up against the other teams on their schedule and seeing what I've seen so far from everybody else, I kind of feel like what the Spartans are 3-1 right now. I think there's at least four wins out of this team yet, five, maybe six. I definitely will say right now, without hesitation, there's no way they're going to beat Ohio State or Penn State. Not this team. Not this year.
Yeah. They're not beating Ohio State or Penn State. That is for sure.
No.
Bad as Nebraska is, Lincoln's been an absolute house of horrors for the Spartans. And
Nebraska is dreadful, though. They are absolutely bad. They might find themselves at the end of the year, but this is a bad Nebraska team, so it's a good year to go on the road and play.
I'm not disagreeing. I think it's a great year to go on the road. But as good a year as it is to go on the road, man, this is tough because, Michigan State hasn't shown a propensity or ability to travel well to Lincoln. It's like all the nice people there just mess with the heads of the football team. It's just weird, man. And so when you look at it that way, it's just tough. So, but I mean, I would expect them to beat Nebraska. I mean, the problem is you want to be playing Nebraska now, not at the end of the year when they might have figured something out.
Yeah.
I mean, now is the time to be playing when they're the most undisciplined team in the Big Ten, because the Nebraska offense, I don't know if you know, I mean, they're moving the ball up and down the field. They're getting like 400 yards of offense, right? 300 yards of offense.
Right.
So it's not like they're not moving the ball around. They're just doing stupid stuff. And it's driving Scott Frost nuts. So you've got that going on. But I sit here and I see what you're saying just in terms of the number of wins on the schedule. Look, I'm Ohio State, Penn State. All right, you knocked that out of the question, right? So those aren't wins that are going to happen.
No.
Northwestern. All right, to me that's a toss-up game. That's a 50-50 game. Maryland and Rutgers, they should beat them. All right, and all right, I'm just going to chalk Rutgers up in the win column. I'm just going to chalk Rutgers up. So, to me, Maryland, though, the way Maryland is playing right now is a real question mark. Maryland's playing inspired ball, and in order for Michigan State to beat Maryland, they have to play error-free football. They don't have to play dominant football. They don't have to play their best game. They have to play error-free football, and we haven't seen Michigan State do that all year long.
So I'm not really sure what this would say about Maryland. I mean, I just don't – I don't know. I think Maryland's playing inspired right now. They also lost to Temple 35-14, so I'm taking everything they do with a grain of salt here. I'm not sold on Maryland.
Yeah, I'm not sold on Maryland either, right? But,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, but right now, I mean, outside of the Temple game, they're playing a decent brand of football. Not great, but decent. You know, it's no accident that their improvement of the football team came with DJ Durkin out on the sideline. It's true.
You brought up the offense, and before we sort of move along here, put your offensive coordinator hat on for a minute. You just look at what you got, which is what it is right now. This is what it is. You got the offensive line that's sort of meh. You got the running backs that are sort of learning on the fly. You got a quarterback trying to do too much. You got receivers sort of in and out of there. What do you do here?
Yeah, it's a mess. I think one of the things that you almost have to do is you've got to go to a lot of 4 and 5 wide receiver sets, right? Even with the number, and it's tricky with all the, Cody White was having not a good year. He was having a great year. And to lose him to a broken hand at this point, I feel bad for the kid. It's a serious blow to the team. But ideally, you want to go 4 and 5 wide DB. And say, we are going to throw the ball to set up the run. And we're going to go 4 or 5 wide, and we're going to go with some tempo. And we're going to go back, and we're going to trust Felton Davis to beat people on the slant. And we're going to trust Daryl Stewart when he gets back to beat people on the slant. And we're going to trust Naylor to beat people over the top and go deep. And, yeah, granted, there were injuries all around, and we're going to trust Sowards to run a great route and show great hands and get open. Right now you've got to put your trust in the hands of Lewerke and those receivers and say, okay, Lewerke, we're going back 4 and 5, 4 wide, 5 wide, and if they come after you, your job is to either get rid of the ball quickly or tuck that ball down and run.
Right.
I just feel you have to do that. And then once you've got them thinking pass, go ahead, sprinkle a little run in. I think the right ratio has got to be 60% pass, 40% run.
Yeah. Now I'm going to throw out one more here.
Yeah, go ahead.
I didn't mean to interrupt your thoughts, though.
No, go ahead. Go for it.
Okay. So I know this might seem far-fetched, but is it possible with some of the key Big Ten games coming up? Now, I'm just throwing this out there. I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist, that the MSU offensive staff has not shown all their cards.
Yeah, I wish that was the case. The MSU offensive staff can't get a goal line sequence right. How are they going to figure out how to call a game without showing all their cards? I just don't think all the – I don't think they have enough neurons firing at that level to do that. It's just, look, I am not in the Fire Warner camp, right? Because I'm watching these guys go out and play. And, man, that offensive line isn't good. And how do you call plays? Look, just tell me this. It is 3rd and 1, and you've called a running play, and your center gets blown off. He gets knocked 5 yards in the backfield off the snap and runs into the people trying to execute the handoff. How is that a bad play call? All right, now, tight end around and, you know, Sowers on the jet sweep inside the goal line and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I get that. Those were not great calls. But a lot of this, I mean, you know, Kirk Cousins overthrows like a bunch of, not Kirk Cousins, Lewerke overthrows a bunch of receivers and they're wide open. If he hits them, you got points. You got first downs, and instead you miss,
yeah.
And you end up behind the chains, and you've got issues. Now, like I said,
yeah.
Not trying to defend Warner. I mean, he's got his own issues, right? So it's not like he's called a perfect season. He's not called a perfect game. He's not doing any of that sort of stuff. I mean, he's called reasonably decent game. But the other thing is sort of weird, and I'm going to get in Spartan Nation a bit on this one. Whether it's running backs or wide receivers or whatever it is, they don't like it when you take out a running back. And they're like, why are you taking him out and putting the other guy in? Because your running back can't carry the ball 50 times a game. It's the same thing. It's like, why aren't you throwing to Felton Davis? Because he's double teamed. You've got to show some patience in all of that. You can't throw it to the best players every time or run the best players every time.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Dave Warner has called enough. I think you answered the way I would have. I think Dave Warner has called enough great games and great moments at Michigan State that he's been there for quite a while now. I mean, no, you're right. I mean, I just don't think there's only so much you can do. I mean, if your offensive line's not firing, then, you know. But here's the thing. This will be my final thought till we sort of, like, pivot into the national scene here. But I'm looking at Michigan State's record. It's 3-1. It could be worse. It could be 1-3. They could have lost to Utah State and Indiana, too.
You're right. It could have been worse.
Yep. It could be 4-0.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have been worse. Could have been better.
Yeah.
I will say this about Warner. Here's my beef with Warner. Everyone's like, yeah, you're defending Warner. All right, here's my beef with Warner. There are certain things that are obviously not working, and Warner has a tendency to try and force them into working. So case in point, against Arizona State, the left side of the offensive line was getting blown up, right? There was no push. They were getting pushed into the backfield. There was nothing going on. At a certain point, you had to say, you want to know what? We can't run left. We're running right. And it doesn't matter who knows. We are running right. And that just didn't happen. And I understand why you want to be able to run left. You're trying new personnel. You're trying new combinations and all this sort of stuff. But at some point, you have to decide, you want to know what? Winning this football game is more important than us trying to figure out who's playing on the left side. Let's run right. And so that part, I will say Warner sometimes gets a little too stubborn.
Right.
And
agreed.
So there's that. And so, but you're right. We could be 4-0. We could be 1-3. So all things considered, we will take what we've got and go from there. You're feeling good about the Northwestern game.
Yeah, just from looking around, not only Northwestern, but just a few of these other teams, and, you know, again, it's actually still early a little bit, you know, and I'm not saying that about Michigan State, I'm saying this about some of the other teams, you know, when I look around here, I need more data on some of these teams to understand, you know, what I'm really looking at.
All right, so let's start in the Big Ten. In our quest for data, let's start in the Big Ten. In your mind, Ohio State clearly the best team in the Big Ten.
Yeah, no argument there.
All right, second best team in the Big Ten, Penn State.
Yes, agreed.
Third best, Wisconsin.
Despite the loss to BYU, yeah, I would still say Wisconsin. Yes.
All right, now we get into the interesting part of the schedule, right? Who comes in after the top three? I mean, it's, I guess, a two-horse race between Michigan State and Michigan, right?
Yeah, I would say Michigan has the edge over Michigan State just by the progress that they've made from that first loss they had to. Again, they ran over some cream puffs, so, you know, I'm not really sure. They struggled against Northwestern. But their defense is really good. And so right now I'd say Michigan State and Michigan are maybe Michigan's just slightly ahead. And I'm only saying that maybe because they can run the ball and their offensive line looks like it's standing up a little bit more.
Yeah, and hey, at least they ran over their cream puffs, right? Which is more than we could say for the Michigan State team. In fact, if you want to go back.
Michigan State hasn't run over cream puffs in a long time.
I know. When's the last? It's been a while since they've just blown someone out of the building.
Right.
And which is historically one of the problems with this Michigan State team. They haven't been able to blow people out of the building, and then they don't get their young guys any reps in real games, and that becomes an issue. It's Michigan State, Michigan. I agree. You almost have to lean Michigan in that case, followed by Michigan State. And then you've got this melange of teams, your Northwesterns and your Illinois and your Purdue's and your Iowa Minnesota. You can't really tell the difference between any of those teams. You know, none of them are odiously bad like Rutgers, but none of them are really good either.
So 2015 is where Michigan, I just looked it up. 2015 is where Michigan State last had what you could consider to be two blowouts. They blew out Indiana at home, 52-26, and they blew out Penn State at home that year, a Penn State team that was still sort of, you know, coming back from the sanctions, 55-16 on Senior Day.
Yeah, so, all right, so I remember the Indiana game, right? That was a late put away. It wasn't, you know, blowout the entire way. The Penn State game, I vaguely remember that one being, you know, but even then, I think it took a while for Michigan State to get the blowout status, right? It's not like they got up 31-0 in the first half and then just cruised the rest of the way. And those are Michigan State teams that played the third and fourth quarter all a heck of a lot better than they're playing the fourth quarter now.
Yeah.
I guess I'm feeling a little pessimistic about this Michigan State team. I just the margin for error is extremely low, and they're if you take a look at the penalties and the turnovers and all that sort of stuff, you're just shrinking it even more. I tend to agree with you on the pecking order in the Big Ten. Alabama DB, best team in the country, is not even close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I almost think, you can circle the top four or five teams and play the playoff tomorrow. I mean, you know, Alabama's up there, Georgia's up there somewhere, Clemson's up there, Notre Dame is going to work themselves up there or is up there that high because and you look at Notre Dame's schedule, they don't have anybody else that they're going to play the rest of the year. And then there's Ohio State, which there's the Blues, basically.
Yeah, I tell you what, if Notre Dame makes the college football playoff, I promise you right here, right now, that they are going to lose 52-3.
Oh, of course they will.
All right, they're not even in the same league as those other teams.
No,
I mean
they play now. Yeah. I'll give them credit against Stanford. They played called a good game against Stanford. Their defense is pretty solid.
Yeah, the defense is solid. Look, yeah, their defense is good, and their offense needs help. That's the bottom line with them. I mean, you put them up against that Clemson defense or that Alabama defense. They're gonna wish touchdown Jesus could come out in the field and play quarterback. it just doesn't work. It's just not all together. And then, so they're going to get there as a function of their schedule, function of them being Notre Dame. By the way, at what point what year does the Notre Dame mystique run out, wear out, where people just stop saying, oh, you have to put them in because they're Notre Dame?
I don't know. I hope soon. Notre Dame at some point, I was thinking about Notre Dame today. Notre Dame needs to really actually join a conference full time, not just play, five games in the ACC. Like they got to pick the conference or something and get in there and stay there. And, they can use the non-conference season for some of their rivalries. But, I don't know. It's, I think the mystique in my mind is already running.
Yeah, I think the mystique is gone too. I think the mystique is gone. I think that in 10 to 15 years, when this era of decision makers gets out and you get people for whom Notre Dame has not been a presence or a force in college football in their lifetime, I think you start to see Notre Dame get treated differently.
Yeah.
And if I'm Notre Dame, and I'm not, and let's face it, Notre Dame is too arrogant to do this because they think they're too good for it. And all you Fighting Irish fans, you can tweet us at Sparty Talk because you know I'm right. Notre Dame should join the Big 12. That's where they belong.
It seems to me they would fit in there pretty well. And the Big 12 needs somebody else other than Oklahoma.
Yeah, and the Big 12 does well in all the other in the non-revenue sports that Notre Dame does well in. They've got the big TV contract. I mean, the fit is perfect. You reduce the travel schedule. You're not traveling to all these ACC schools. Everything makes sense. Notre Dame isn't going to do it because they think they're too good for the Big 12.
Yeah.
And so they're not going to do it. I mean, I can tell you right now, they're not going to do it. They're too arrogant to actually do something that makes that much sense. Speaking of arrogance, what do you think of Jim Harbaugh and the Wolverines?
Obviously I don't like, but that goes without saying. I think that Jim Harbaugh, I think the hype is worn down with Jim Harbaugh. I mean, it was all there at first. And, of course, and I'm not talking among their fans. I'm just talking beyond that. They do a good job of hyping themselves up. But Michigan, the University of Michigan has always been that way. As a program, for football, yeah. I mean, I think that they're trying to just get
back on even footing with Michigan State, I think they still have a long way to go to be nationally considered. I mean, they may pop their head into one of football playoffs, you know, at some point. You know, they're going to get there. But I think it's as long as Urban Meyer is still at Ohio State, I think it's going to be hard for everybody else to be consistently, you know, in the Big Ten.
This doesn't look like the Michigan team that's going to get it done. Which isn't to say they're not good. I think their defense is really good, but I think their offense, even with the new quarterback, has a long ways to go before it brings them up to a championship level of any sort.
They wouldn't be able to beat Clemson or Alabama at this point.
Nope, I agree with that. What do you think of Jimbo Fisher grabbing that guy by the face mask?
I didn't see it.
Yeah, one of his players made a mistake on the field or did something stupid, and as he was pulling off the field, good old Jimbo grabbed coach of Texas A&M now, grabbed him by the face mask, yanked him towards him. To me, it's pretty simple, right? You don't put your hands on the players. I don't know which part of this is super complicated. You don't put your hands on the players. This isn't complicated. It should seem to be the most instrumental, and you know the players saying, "Well, I'm glad he did this. You know, he's just giving me tough love and all this sort of stuff." And you know the coach is trying to say, "Look, I'm just you know trying to teach him right from wrong." You don't put your hands on the players. There's no excusing that. So I just don't get that. So you got that. By the way, I was in Charleston on Saturday. Charleston, South Carolina.
Having a little trouble hearing you, Sachmo. I think you're breaking up a little bit. I think we're running out of time.
All right, hold on. I'm going to try calling back in. So just give me 1 second.
Okay.
Here.
All right, I'll just talk for a second. Anyway, if you're listening to Sparty Talk, our Twitter handle is at Sparty Talk. DB has not been able to find the Twitter rhythm tonight. We're just sort of like, this feels like a preseason game.
How do I sound, DB?
You're sounding still a little choppy, like you're in a helicopter or something like that.
Yeah. You're sounding a bit choppy as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on. Maybe it's there's a lot of problems with Blog Talk. We can probably wrap it up and make sure we're back pretty soon.
Yeah, let's do that. Let me just try telling this one story real fast and have you respond to it, and then we'll go from there. And hopefully the audio sounds a lot better on the back end than it does on the front end. Which is, I was in Charleston, South Carolina on Saturday, college football Saturday. And I discovered something interesting. There were more people excited about the Penn State-Ohio State game than were excited about any of the SEC games going on that day and any of the ACC games going on that day. In fact, the bartender was telling me that they were going to have a full house that night, whereas the bar I was in, it was a football bar, was only half full with – Syracuse threatening to upset Clemson. It was weird. And I asked, has it always been like this? And they're like, nah, it wasn't like this until the college football playoffs started. And people started caring about what was going on in other conferences in other parts of the country because it had a direct impact on who was going to win the national championship. And so this, I thought, was interesting. You're traditionally, SEC only, ACC, Deep South about football. They're starting to care about football outside of their region because of the college football playoffs. And this is exactly what the NCAA wanted. This is exactly what the college football playoff wanted. And it's interesting to see that it's actually paying off and happening.
Yeah, when you went away for a second, I had mentioned that I really feel like at some point they have to see more teams and more of a real playoff. You know, less of the, you know, I don't even want to see rankings until we're like in the middle of the season, you know, and I want to see the NCAA be more proactive in the non-conference schedule. And I want to see, kind of like we do with the ACC Big Ten Challenge in basketball, I want to see some of these teams have to have tests in the non-conference part of the year, just like they do in the NFL where they play the other first-place team. I want to see, you know, a non-conference game one year where Alabama has to play Ohio State. And I want to see, you know, Wisconsin have to play Auburn. And you know what I mean? Like, I want to see, like some of these matchups like that. I don't want them to be able to just schedule all their own games and you know, play more conference games. Sure, that's fine. And end that regular season maybe like around Veterans Day in November and then start the playoffs. I want to see a little bit. I want it to get to a truer champion. You can keep the bowl game. I think that's totally fine. You can keep them their rewards for the, you know, teams that didn't get into the playoffs. But I think, you know, let's have a real, let's have it more. But I think that's a good thing, what you're describing.
Yeah, it's definitively a good game. And by the way, the sheer number of Big Ten people representing in Charleston, South Carolina, there I saw a dozen Penn State people, a dozen Ohio State people, saw, you know, six or seven Michigan State people. Yeah, I saw one Wisconsin person. Noticeably absent from Charleston, South Carolina, the University of Michigan. Because their alumni base doesn't reach as far as people think. I thought that was interesting, and I appreciated that. And the other thing I've noticed in my travels, because I've had to travel a couple times on College Football Saturday, is the number of people watching games on YouTube TV or Sling TV or whatever their streaming choice is, sitting in airports with headphones on, watching games and reacting to it, and not having to worry about whether the game is playing in the bar at the airport. It's not a concern whatsoever. They're just able to watch whatever they want, wherever they want.
Right. Sports bars becoming less and less of a thing, I think.
Seriously, when you have a big TV and you have access to any game you want, why are you going to go to a sports bar?
Right.
I mean, obviously you go to a sports bar to spend time with friends and drink a couple brews and that sort of thing, or meet the alumni group, but it's a big ask to get out of your couch and away from your 50-inch or 60-inch or 70-inch TV with snacks and drinks that are a slight cheaper than what you're going to get at the bar for anything else. So, yeah, it's definitely a big ask. That's all I got. You got anything before we wrap this show up?
I got nothing else this week other than, we can plan to talk again perhaps after the Penn State game and see how we're looking there.
Yep, I agree. I think talking after the Penn State game works and see how we're looking after that. You know, Michigan State loses to Northwestern. Maybe we do an emergency pod to discuss that loss. And then hockey fans, just keep an eye out for it. The Red Wings are starting a bunch of kids, and they have no idea what they're going to get. And so this season is going to be intriguing. This season is coming 5 years too late. Henrik Zetterberg, we're going to miss you. But this is going to be an intriguing season. And maybe just one day the Red Wings will get around to retiring Sergei Fedorov's number.
Mm-hmm.
But it is just an abomination that they haven't done it yet.
Hockey is back. Spartan hockey is back pretty soon, too. So
Spartan
hockey
is back.
Something to talk about in the coming week. Yes.
That's to talk about. And what will happen first? Will Fedorov's number go to the rafters, or will the Illichs sell the Tigers? On that note, I know, juicy stuff. Things to think about for the next edition of the pod, because I think these are all things worth considering.
That sounds good. Hopefully Blog Talk Radio will be a little more cooperative the next time around. Until then, we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.